The Hello Careers podcast explores a system developed to align business needs with education and training. It's proven to be invaluable for dozens of businesses and people looking to create a new life for themselves. We are firm believers that you must screen for attitude and train for aptitude. We're unpacking our insight to help you build partnerships and earn public support for an age-old way of learning a skill, apprenticeship. We'll address issues such as, where there's a skills gap, is there an education and training gap? How do you respond to a tight labor market? What happens when the major employer pulls out of your community? If you're looking to create an apprenticeship program or curious about what to do next, this show could be just the thing you've been looking for. I'm your host, Mark Sylvester. Now, let's get started and talk with the team. Well, welcome back to the show, everybody. Michael and Dan, this episode, I want to talk about the nuts and bolts of just administering the program so that we give the listener a sense of what are the things they need to do. So, you know, they've either got the grant or they're writing the grant. We've talked about partnership. We've talked about all those things, but there's just some, it's not the sexy stuff, right? But it's the systems, it's the rigor, that's the how you get this done. And I want to get in, I also want to get into partner management. We've talked about partners, but I want to talk about partner management as well. Like there's a lot of work to pull this off. So let's dig into that. Why don't we start with what are the main tasks? Let's take a day or a week. What are the main tasks you guys have to spend your time on?
So the care and feeding of apprenticeship.
Oh, there you go. I like that's my title.
Because we have a registered apprenticeship program with the state of California, we need to work with the Division of Apprenticeship Standards.
Okay.
And what's been particularly interesting and fun with this is it's dominated by union trades right now. So our innovative apprenticeship has thrown them a few curveballs. And my response always when I talk to them is, well, you partnered with the Community College Chancellor's Office to create an innovative grant. This is what you get when you have an innovative grant. It's not going to fit neatly in a box.
Got it.
But the process, notwithstanding, the process is still really good because the whole strategy and approach of engaging businesses, developing what they call work processes, which are basically detailed lists of what exactly do you do when you're on the job, identifying competencies and how many hours it would take you to get to those competencies so that you can establish how long does this apprenticeship need to be? Is it a one-year program? Is it a two-year program? How many classroom hours would you have to take? So identifying just those buckets right there, because an apprenticeship has to have minimum of 144 hours a year of classroom time and a minimum of 2008 hours. So a one-year apprenticeship in California is kind of the minimum you can do. And there's some other lists too. There's this thing called the ONET codes. And those are like when you go to the Bureau of Labor Statistics and you look at job profiles and things, it's the same thing. There's a whole list of these things and job families.
Like
and job
NAICS codes for businesses.
Yes. And your apprentice program should have an ONET code that's an apprenticeable occupation. We, of course, pushed the envelope on that. Quality assurance software testing was not previously on the list, but we petitioned to have it put on the list. So you're working with a bureaucracy. They have their rules. They have their ways of doing things. And if you're doing an innovative apprenticeship program, you're going to be telling them things, well, can we do it this way too?
So now, Dan, everything he just said is stuff you don't like to do, right? Because it's a bureaucracy part. And what I'm thinking is if it's a guy like the entrepreneur who's setting up this plan, they need to go find someone like Michael who is not scared by the word compliance and governance and those kind of things, because that's a fact of life in what you're doing.
And it's no different from starting a small business that you still need to understand. You're going to deal with the Office of Trademark and you're going to be dealing with taxes and the IRS and your state and local governments and licensing, et cetera. So there's just that due diligence that you have to do. And really where it comes into if Dan's out there working with the business to understand what the needs are, you then have to translate it back into what these forms are requiring from you, that you're going to submit an application to the Division of Apprenticeship Standards, identifying how many hours is the classroom instruction, how many hours is the apprenticeship, what are the work processes that you got, what are the companies that you're working with, and then there's some forms that have to be filled out between you, the employer, and the apprentices, agreeing to what the wage progression is going to be and how many hours it's going to be and are there going to be benefits involved, and you agree to this length of an apprenticeship, and then there's the rules and regulations for how you're going to run the apprenticeship. And that's just sort of some belts and suspenders right there of making sure that you're creating a new program. So what are you going to do if something goes wrong? Do you have a process for resolving whatever that conflict is or that misunderstanding or that new situation? And that's where also there's an apprenticeship committee that will have businesses on there as well as education members, so that you have a forum to be able to process these things and vet these things. And if you do want to approve new standards or change or modify standards, you have a process for doing that.
When you become it's a registered apprentice program, it's the program itself is registered, or the individual business is registered, or how does that work?
All of those. So in our case, we're a multi-employer registered apprenticeship program.
Got it.
You need to have both a local education agency.
Yep.
So in the local education agency, it could be a community college or it could be a county office of education. So San Luis Obispo County Office of Education is the local education agency sponsoring the program. And then we have businesses that are part of our business partners, and they can choose to be on the advisory committee or not. So we've got three members of the business that want to be on the advisory committee. All the others still have an open invitation. If they'd like to join us, they can. And together, we work to run and administer the apprenticeship program. I'm the administrator, and then I have my staff, which is Dan Weeks, and then an assistant, because there's paperwork.
Yep.
You have to keep track of attendance. You have to keep track of the work processes. That's where that WorkHands app helps make things a little bit easier that way. For the grants, you have to make sure that you establish your quarterly reports. And those are both budget quarterly reports as well as program outcomes. And all of these California apprenticeship initiatives are all tied to what's called strong workforce metrics. And those are all tied to labor market indicators. So they want to see, you know, what's the effect we're having on our economy? Were there new jobs formed? Were there how many businesses were served? So it's really trying to get a tie into how are these education and training systems influencing your labor market and economic indicators?
Because I'm thinking that as this is a new program, that everybody's kind of paying attention to it, right? Let's see if this really does work. It sounds good. Like, you know, Michael, you talk a good game, and it sounds good in North Carolina, sounds good in Switzerland. Let's see how it plays out here. So figuring all of this out, everybody's looking at you. So you've gotten really good at writing reports. I get that. You had mentioned something about figuring out what were all the work processes, all the competencies. I'm thinking, as a guy who ran a software company, if someone came in and we had to sit down and figure all of that out, you've had to go, Dan, and do that with each of these businesses to figure all that out, right?
Yeah. What's nice is when Michael mentioned the ONET codes, they already spell it out to some degree. Like within IT, there might be 9 variants of IT jobs. So you find the one that's the closest, and you mix some of the work processes that are already there. So the ONET codes do give you a line in the sand that has some of that covered. So that made it easier. I think the key thing that Michael did is he hired a consultant who knows the whole apprenticeship process.
I had a ringer.
Was key. Great.
I hired a former Division of Apprenticeship Standards employee.
That was key.
Oh.
Because we didn't have to be an expert on things that are tied to the nuances of that organization. You know, we could focus on, well, this is what the work needs to be, and then she would say, that won't work. That's not detailed enough. That's okay. But that was key.
What got you to, I mean, that's clever. What made you decide to do that?
Well, I think you already understand that relationship is a very key component in how we launch this thing. So we had had, I had had a previous relationship with this DAS consultant that she was in our region. She was our region's DAS consultant. And we had met through a number of job developer meetings that the job developers were on a monthly basis. We would get together and compare notes on who was hiring, who was not. Are there? And she had mentioned at one of the meetings, there are going to be these apprenticeship grants coming out. I'd like to work with you guys to make one of those happen. So I remembered that. And, you know, since the time that the Community College Chancellor's Office has initiated these grants in partnership with the DAS, the Division of Apprenticeship Standards Consultants have really come on strong. They're really well-prepared individuals, and they've hired more staff to be out there to offer this consultancy for free. So look in your region and find out who your Division of Apprenticeship Standard Consultant is. Even if you're just a business person and wanted to start your own apprenticeship standards, call the DAS. They'll send a consultant out and they'll walk you through the whole process. That's what they're meant to do.
It's nice because they'll try to have an abundance mentality to say, I'm not sure you're going to be able to do this. Let me follow up, because you might have to change some wording. But they weren't just, here's the rules. No, 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 no. I mean, it was great. We've worked with two DAS consultants and someone who was formerly DAS, and they're all trying to make it work.
Again, a partnership is everything here. Let's talk about managing the partners. Because one of the things we didn't talk about in an earlier episode was the regional liaisons, deputy sector navigators, what we're doing with community college. I'm just thinking all the little slices of partnership that you need to manage. How do you keep track of it all?
Well, project management will make or break you, obviously. Okay. And so always setting up your leads and doing follow-up and having things on your calendar is an automatic that you've got to really project manage this and have your calendar and your schedule and follow-up. If you're going to have all these partnerships, just like keeping a friendship, you got to keep in touch and keep in touch regularly. And that's where having other partners, like each community college has what's called a deputy sector navigator. And they've been tasked through the Community College Chancellor's Office with helping to engage businesses in different regional sectors.
Yep.
So in our case, Cuesta College has a business entrepreneurship deputy sector navigator. And that really is excellent for us, because what type of business doesn't need business entrepreneurship?
Exactly.
So whether it's tech, whether it's ag, whether it's hospitality, business entrepreneurship cuts across it. So she's really great about reaching out and being and putting on events and convening people to talk about entrepreneurship and promote business entrepreneurship with a variety of people. And she works actively with the chambers of commerce to do trainings and things like that on customer service, et cetera. So she's a great partner to have in this, in helping to keep your partners engaged so that you stay relevant.
We talk about we've created a product and we want to drive awareness for it, knowledge, interest, liking, as we're talking about the funnel. Most people, when they get the customer, they just move on. Hey, thanks. Cash a check and move on. And what is becoming even more important now is nurturing campaigns and nurturing strategies, right? And that's, and I see you guys nodding your heads. So it's like, what's the nurturing strategy that someone should put in place now psychologically for themselves? And then what are the kinds of things they need to do to nurture these relationships?
I think... as you move beyond San Luis Obispo County, where Michael and I are, and you look beyond that, I think that you have to really think about, what's my short list of my first tier relationships, second tier, third tier. What Michael had from another grant was a lot of this in place, which was great. But I think some of the key priorities someone needs to make is, if I'm going to have three relationships, what are they? And if I'm going to have five, what are they? And that's the type of decisions you have to make if you're starting from scratch. Because that's where Michael was 3 years ago when he set some of this up. And some of the relationships are much, much more important. Like the EBC relationship is very, very important. The Chamber of Commerce is, there's a lot of ones that are important, but you have to, you can't make them all the number one priority.
Well, no, you can't, especially with a, we already talked about lean startup mentality, right? So you've got a triage. So I know that one of the things that we've got to do with this program is we've got to do reports. So I'm thinking there's the compliance reports that you've got to do for grants. But what are the other kinds of reports that you are doing back to like the businesses or back to the educators or back to the other people in the ecosystem? Is that something that you're doing?
Yeah, so different partners have different newsletters they may put out, or they have their board meetings that they have, or they have, you know, what department meetings or things like that. So we've regularly, we're on a number of different task force where we're asked to report and give progress. And what I like about those opportunities is if you just look at it as I need to report, you're not getting what you need out of it. It's a chance for other people to give you feedback too, and also to get their perspective on what's going on. And I think that's a real important feedback loop, because you've got, you know, you can get tunnel vision, but you can't see the forest from the trees.
Sure.
And getting that outside perspective on how other people perceive you and how they perceive your success and or failures, I think is very important to strategically planning your next move and where you might have some blind spots.
It's interesting. They say the brand isn't what you say it is what the person says about it when you leave the room. And it's, to that point, interesting getting that feedback from everyone involved in the ecosystem, because there's so many, we've identified over the series of shows, so many different players that this touches, right? Partners that it touches.
I think one of the things we've done also is multiple times a month, we're giving updates to groups that are interested in what we're doing, almost like a startup giving a pitch to someone else about what their business is. We do it on an ongoing basis, but that's how these other partners hear about us and ask us questions and say, oh, we could partner with you. We know some people, we know some companies, but they're all interested in innovation and hearing things at their regular meetings that are interesting, not the same old thing.
So that gives me an idea as I'm thinking that the listener is setting up one of these programs in their community, that having, and we talked about this in the first show about having a communication strategy.
Yes.
But knowing that you kind of always had this deck that was ready to go, that was what is this program? Who's it serving? And you're kind of adding new stuff to it. So at the end of the day, there might be 200 slides in it, but you show like, here's the 15, the chamber could show, and here's the, so that was generally available and you were kind of constantly adding to that. So it feels like one of the things we've not really addressed, it now is a good time to do it, is scalability, like growing this thing and getting other people who can amplify the story for you might be helpful. So in all these reports, are you guys, it sounds like you guys might be doing this a few times a week, where you're going out and giving a presentation to somebody, or?
I think it's just being out there and being part of the community, that it should come naturally, and you should be part of these regularly occurring meetings anyway. If you're not, you're on the outside and you need to get on the inside. Mm. Now, you need to be seen and recognized as a convener if you want to have this type of regional partnership, that you've got to be the one. You may not be the lead convener, but you should be one of the conveners and helping to refer people to each other. That's a key just relationship builder that brings more partners there.
I'm feeling leadership. Explain that.
Well, I've survived a number of years with the Jesuits, and the Jesuits are a Catholic religious order that believe in this idea of service leadership, that leaders serve others.
Yep.
And people will follow those who serve and not just lead and wonder if anybody's following them.
So that's a mindset that's helped you be successful in this.
Well, it's another matter of, you know, instead of asking for something from the business, you're trying to give something to the business and come into it as an equal partner, where the there's a win-win situation that you need to be looking for in that partnership.
I get a sense, you've said that now 4 or 5 times, that feels like that's not the normal way this kind of operation would work. And that's maybe one of the reasons why this is being so successful.
Well, you don't want to have the nonprofit model where you're constantly fundraising, where your relationship with businesses is, I ask you to come to my fundraiser once a year and you get to put your logo on my event.
Right.
That's great. If it's for a nonprofit and for a worthy cause, we understand that. But it's a little different. We're talking about jobs. We're talking about economic development, workforce development. On the surface, there should be some type, there's a grant or there's taxpayer dollars that are supposed to be going towards that. But those may not be as effective as they could be. So this is where we're trying to take a grant that is publicly funded, add some entrepreneurism and innovation to it so that we can really make something that's one-time money sustainable.
I can give an analogy to this. When I was with HP, I was there for 25 years. We worked closely with both Google and Yahoo on ways to do, at the time, it was printed maps because I was with the inkjet printing group. And I remember when we talked with Google, their advice was, let's make it relevant and then we'll figure out how to monetize it. What Yahoo did is had the monetization person was there at the very first meeting, and it really held back innovation. What we're doing for apprenticeship here from the employer's perspective is we're not asking from them anything other than to have exposure to amazing people. Over time, we can shift our business model to maybe during the on-the-job training. We get some percentage of the wages during the on-the-job training, which is what unions do right now. But in the short term, we're just about adding value, and then we're figuring out from a scalability, how do we add enough value that the businesses are happy to share some amount of funding back to us, as opposed to upfront saying, give us X thousands of dollars and you can talk to our apprentices. What you really want to do is become relevant, and then you'll say, oh, well, I want more of those. Well, here's a good way that we can fund what we're providing to you post-grant. And that's, Michael and I are working on lots of ways that post-grant, our value will be high enough that we can be self-funded.
So we've talked about that. How do we not get addicted to the grant money, right? And it becomes then a sustainable business. And it feels like it's value-based selling then, value-based fees, right?
Yeah, when you have credibility and they realize, wow, instead of having my jobs open for 4 months and then settling, I can get people on an ongoing basis who are superior, and I pay them an amount that's totally fair, and I don't have hiring for these type of people as a big strategic issue for me anymore.
I think it's this, your understanding of the business, Dan, and your understanding of how that whole ecosystem works, Michael, that it's that dovetailing of it that is really what's providing such an immense amount of value. Because we talked about it wasn't just, we're not filling jobs, we're building careers, which by definition is so much larger. And thinking, even, how we talk about lifetime customer value, mm-hmm. right? There's kind of that vibe here. What's the lifetime customer value for that long-term relationship you're building with a business, right? We're gonna be here 10 years from now talking about this. What's that look like? And then also, what's the lifetime value to that employee? Because heck, that boot camp was pretty good, and I'm at 85. Well, gee, is there something around to get me up to 1.25? Is there something? Start thinking about lifetime customer value. Now it's all about the value and not a transaction.
I think that's really true. If Michael and I think of this as a startup tied to education technology, and we have seed funding, and we're really trying to avoid the venture capital round.
Yeah.
And the way we do that is our seed funding built enough credibility that the numbers work after the seed funding, as opposed to us having to feel like we're going to need additional money. And I know that if we weren't associated with the County Office of Education, I couldn't pull off this as an entrepreneur because it wouldn't have the credibility of the County Office of Education. You know, this is the right way to do this. If you try to do it as a separate fintech startup, you won't have things lined up to be able to pull it off longer term.
And I think that it's easy until you start digging into it and it gets a little complicated, which is why it's taking us, will take us 8 shows to kind of figure it all out. But within that, that's not that much time to explain all the nuances of it and why the partnership model is the way to work and why this approach has worked out so well.
I think you need to be looking at partners who you wouldn't normally be working with. Mm. Now, because if you're only talking to the people that you're already comfortable talking with, you're not going to get anything innovative out of that. And you may be missing a part of the conversation that you need to be involved in. You know, this conversation, you know, Dan and I partnering up, he comes from Cal Poly Hot House, entrepreneur in residence. I'm from K-12 education. That's not a likely partnership. But as Dan just explained, it's a great relationship in that I was able to get the business intel because of his credibility as a business entrepreneurship, but then vice versa in building an education training program, relationship with the County Office of Education gave him credibility too. That's what we mean by a win-win situation.
We're both social entrepreneurs, but being tied to a County Office of Education really unleashes that whole social entrepreneurship effort at another level.
Someone once asked me what gives you permission to be in business. And that's kind of what gives you guys permission to do this, right? It's having, and it feels like it's the right time for this as well. Like, what do you do? I mean, is it an interesting problem? We have pretty much no unemployment. Now, what do? Right? We want to upskill. I love that word, upskilling. How do we, okay, let's take what we have that's already working well. How do we make that thing work better, which generates more income? And as soon as money's involved, people are start to pay attention. And as soon as you start having success stories around that, people pay even more attention. So I'm going to guess with this podcast, we're going to have more microscopes looking at us, right? But that's a good thing, right? Because that helps us get this whole thing better.
Well, we don't think we have all the answers. I think what we've done is through our launch and learn, there's a lot of good progress we've made, but I think each location has unique challenges.
Sure.
But I think some of the mindset that we've talked about over this podcast series just gets you to say, wow, that's a different way of looking at it. We should contrast this with the way we were planning to do it.
Well, that's what makes it interesting. You said all the stuff we're doing is new and hasn't been done. Right.
Michael likes to say that if we get it right 90% of the time, we still get an A.
He says
that all the time, which is great.
What really keeps government institutions and bureaucracies from being innovative is that fear of failure.
Mm.
That they're afraid of not being able to check the boxes on the compliance part of the grant or the compliance reporting. But you've got to be able to, if you're going to be innovative, you will have some failures. But is what have you learned from those failures and how are you going to recover from them? That's, again, where your relationship building and your trust that you can have with your partners, that should give you a lot more cover than you think you have. If you're really going about developing those partnerships with trust and with a win-win where there's everybody gets something out of it.
You think it's ironic, Dan, that he says that there's the fear of failure in that world, yet in the entrepreneurial world, we almost look for failure because it means if we're not failing, we're not trying. Right. Not that we want to fail. None of us want to fail, but we try. Oh, that didn't work. Oh, to go back, try. Oh, that one clicked. Let's keep doing more of that. Oh, you keep trying. So we don't have that. It's just an interesting fear. I was noticing how.
Well, we're government or you're a public trust. And
yes.
So a failure is seen as a breach of that public trust and, you know, public funds. So in this case, we're being innovative with a grant that we applied for and were awarded in a competitive manner. So we've been given more of a license to take a risk.
Yep.
That we've been asked to be innovative and be creative.
I think a key is Michael's unflappable. But it's true. Like, for example,
When you've had to go in front of a classroom of teenagers for 20 years, you can deal with a lot.
I love working with them because, like, for example, our apprenticeship standards assumed the employer was going to be pre-assigned a person before they've even talked to them. And we said,
you didn't
there's
do
no
that.
Way.
Yeah.
But that's, Michael said, well, that won't work here. We can't make that decision until the employer has said, I want person A and person G and not the other ones. But their mentality was a union hall where they
right.
want three people and three people show up. But it's like, no, that's just not the way this will work when it's new. But there's a saying when we go up the stairs in the hothouse or new business incubator, my favorite one is expect problems and eat them for breakfast.
Right.
But that's what this is we're going to have some. It's the 10% of the time. But with the 90% we get right, it feels really good.
Guys, I appreciate how in 7 episodes here, we've been able to go through and document all of the, you know, the really salient pieces. What I'd like to do for our last episode is I want to talk about the future. I want to talk about where we think this might go. So, listener, catch us on our next episode.
Thank you for listening. How will you bring this system to your community and say hello to new careers and goodbye to low-wage jobs? For more episodes, visit hellocareers.org or send us a note to podcast@hellocareers.org. We'd love to hear from you with questions or success stories of how apprenticeship is working in your region. Till next time, I'm Mark Sylvester with Hello Careers.